John Bachman, who pierces in people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, March 14th, 2011. On Friday at night, a family living in the settlement of Itamar in the Nablus region were murdered in their sleep. Despite any apparent evidence, the murder of the Fogel family has been blamed by the State of Israel on one or more Palestinians and branded a terror attack. The murdered persons included the parents of the family and three of their five children, including a three-month-old baby. Following the attack, Israeli soldiers streamed into the settlement to set up a perimeter. The troops then invaded several nearby Palestinian villages and set up checkpoints along Palestinian roads. If the attack was carried out by a Palestinian with a political motivation, this would mark the largest single attack on Israeli civilians in 6 years. Palestinian Prime Minister Dr. Salam Fayyad strongly denounced the stabbing attack on Saturday, stating that the Palestinian Authority rejects all sorts of violence and will not tolerate it. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed to punish the attackers and demanded Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to help in locating them. Furthermore, Netanyahu instructed the army and the security services to act on a large scale and apprehend the assailants, whilst Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman instructed the Israeli envoy to the UN to file an official complaint. On the ground, Israeli soldiers invaded on Saturday at dawn the village of Awarta, close to Itamar settlement, and broke into dozens of homes, including the homes of the brothers of two Palestinians who were killed by the army several months ago near to the Itamar settlement, detaining several. Furthermore, soldiers imposed a curfew on Awarta village and surrounded its nearby graveyard and initiated a search. The army also installed several roadblocks near Nablus and reinstalled roadblocks that were removed in recent months, such as those at Al-Batan, Hawara, and Al-Tanib. As a result, 20 Palestinians have been detained. On Saturday at night and early Sunday at dawn, dozens of Palestinian homes in Hawara town, south of the northern West Bank city of Nablus, were attacked by settlers who hurled stones at local vehicles, torched several vehicles, and broke into a number of homes after surrounding them. Furthermore, settlers hurled stones at Palestinian vehicles driving near a first settlement, near Silwan, east of the central West Bank city of Ramallah. Settlers from the Kiryat Arba settlement in Hebron attacked a number of homes near the settlement. Settlers of the Christina settlement east of the city also attacked a number of nearby homes. Damage was reported in both areas. Also in the Hebron district, settlers torched a vehicle and wounded a child in Betamar town. Local sources said that the attack against their town was carried out by at least 250 settlers, and that the settlers hurled stones at local homes and vehicles, whilst a child was moved to a local clinic after inhaling gas fired by the Israeli army. Furthermore, a group of settlers attacked homes in Al Arub refugee camp, located on the main road that links Hebron and Bethlehem. Damage was reported, but no injuries. 5 members of the Abu Akha family were wounded on Saturday evening after being attacked by a group of armed settlers. The family was driving on the Jerusalem-Hebron road while driving back to their home in Bethlehem. On Sunday, in the village of Jinzafut near Kalkilia, settlers torched 2 cars belonging to Palestinian civilians, while settlers took to Palestinian streets in the central West Bank city of Salfit, opening fire at homes and throwing stones at passing cars. Near the settlement of Bet El, north of Ramallah, settlers torched 3 cars, including a Ford Transit van used to take people between Ramallah and Bethlehem. The owner of the vehicle depended on the transport service to provide for his family. In the southern West Bank, settlers began construction on a new outpost near the village of Juba, while in Al-Bakr village, northeast of Hebron, armed settlers supported by Israeli army personnel broke into the home of Abdul Jawad Jabbar, causing damage. As previously mentioned, Israeli security forces have yet to provide evidence of Palestinian involvement in these murders, and it bears noting that in the last 6 years, Israeli forces have killed upwards of 2,000 Palestinian civilians, as well as repeated injuries and murders committed by the settler population in the West Bank. Also on Sunday, the Israeli government announced that 500 new units would be constructed on Palestinian land. The new units were approved in the settlements of Gush Etzion, Kiryat Sefer, and Meliadamim in the Bethlehem area. This is in addition to the 1,400 new units approved last month for construction in East Jerusalem. Following the announcement, President Mahmoud Abbas condemned the decision, saying that it hinders peace efforts, and the US government also criticized the decision, saying that the actions run counter to peace efforts by Israeli, Palestinian, and US officials. That sums up our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You've been listening to Palestine Today from the International Middle East Media Center. For more updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Hussam Qasis and Sarkari Fahizia.
Conservatives are pushing ahead on their cultural war on Islam by promoting legislation that bans Sharia law. This follows last fall's campaign against Park 51, the mosque and cultural center several blocks from Ground Zero in New York City. One of the most extreme anti-Sharia bills is in Tennessee. It makes it a felony to follow Sharia, the core religious principles of Islam. The bill also criminalizes material support for a Sharia organization, defined as 2 people conspiring to support Sharia law in any state in the United States. The bill was drafted by right-wing lawyer David Yerushalmi, who backed foes of New York City's Park 51 project and is a self-proclaimed Sharia expert. Less well-known is Yerushalmi's association with white separatists. According to Mother Jones magazine, he is the founder of the Society of Americans for National Existence, or SANE. In a 2006 essay on the SANE website, Yerushalmi asserted that whites are genetically superior to blacks and more supportive of democratic norms. Despite his racist rantings, Yerushalmi has won praise from right-wing opinion journals like the National Review and the Washington Times. Abed Awad, an authority on Islamic law, says the Tennessee bill would criminalize core Muslim practices like praying 5 times a day and donating money to the poor. And civil liberties advocates maintain that the bill violates core values of the U.S. Constitution.
While we're on the subject of racist, anti-Muslim, GOP hate-mongering, how about those King hearings on Capitol Hill, which have reduced American Muslim leaders to tears as they try to explain that members of the American Muslim community are not supporters of Al-Qaeda? Due to these trumped-up charges and racist congressional hearings, Muslim groups have had to warn mosques and Muslim communities throughout the United States be on the lookout for terrorism by American right-wing extremists. You may recall that shortly after September 11th, several Sikhs in New York City were mistaken for Muslims, which they are not, and beaten to death by such terrorists. Afghanistan, Saturday. NATO is reporting the deaths of 2 occupation soldiers from insurgent attacks, at least one of them from an IED. Kunduz, Afghanistan, yesterday. A suicide bomber hit an Afghan army recruiter, killing at least 37 people and wounding nearly 40. The attacker approached on foot and detonated his explosives vest among a group of army volunteers lined up outside the recruiting center, Kunduz Deputy Governor Hamula Danashi said. There was a report on WTOP radio that the Taliban is now waging a shock and awe campaign of their own as the Afghan war goes on 9.5 years and the Iraq war will have been going on exactly 8 years as of this Saturday. Afghanistan ongoing. His cousin having been killed by an errant U.S. Special Forces house raid and children dying under U.S. airstrikes, Afghan President Karzai is asking NATO to end its combat operations in the country. Yala Province, Iraq, yesterday. A suicide truck bombing at an Iraqi military base north of Baghdad killed at least 10 people and wounded 30 others. Most of the dead and wounded were Iraqi soldiers, according to Bakuba police, who said the truck bomber rammed the barracks and detonated. Police combed through the rubble of the building looking for victims. The attack took place in the town of Canaan, about 10 kilometers south of Bakuba in Diyala province, which is ethnically mixed. Basra, Iraq, Sunday. A roadside bomb missed a U.S. convoy and detonated late, blowing up a bus seconds after the convoy and killing 7 innocent people. A second bomb exploded near a second U.S. convoy, also in Basra, with no reports of damage or injuries. Wait a minute. Roadside bombs targeting U.S. convoys? What U.S. convoys? U.S. combat operations in Iraq were supposed to be over, but that's been said before, most famously by George W. Bush almost 8 years ago. All U.S. troops were supposed to be out of Iraq by December, but then again, all U.S. combat operations were supposed to end last summer, and obviously they have not. Mr. Barack Obama, the Iraq war will have been grinding on exactly 8 years this Saturday, and nothing has changed. Now is the time to pull the plug, bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. You won't see me back there again. No, you won't see me back there again.
Those army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, Deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Army Private First Class Bradley Manning stands accused by the U.S. government of being the source of 260,000 diplomatic government cables, more than 90,000 intelligence reports, later distributed to the press by WikiLeaks. After being arrested in Iraq in May 2010 and transferred back to the U.S. in July, the Army intelligence analyst has been held in solitary confinement at the Marine Corps brig in Quantico, Virginia, undergoing a mental health evaluation and awaiting pretrial hearings. In early March, military prosecutors filed an additional 22 charges against Private Manning, including allegations that he aided the enemy, which could carry the death penalty. Manning's lawyer, David E. Coombs, complained that his client was stripped of his clothes and left naked in his prison cell for 7 hours on March 2nd. In a press release, Coombs stated, "This type of degrading treatment is inexcusable and without justification. No other detainee at the brig is forced to endure this type of isolation and humiliation." Ohio Democratic Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who has requested to meet with Manning to investigate allegations of mistreatment, said that despite the fact that Manning has not been found guilty of any crime, he has been kept in isolation 23 out of 24 hours every day, conditions which may violate his Eighth Amendment protection from cruel and unusual punishment. A Pentagon press secretary stated that the conditions under which Manning is being held relate to the seriousness of the charges he's facing and to protect him from potential harm. David House, who has visited Manning in the brig, reports that isolation has severely deteriorated his friend's mental condition, but that there is no indication of suicidal behavior. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Colleen Rowley, a former FBI special agent who in May 2002 wrote a memo describing some of the FBI's pre-9/11 failures and was named one of Time magazine's Persons of the Year in 2002. She decries the treatment Bradley Manning is being subjected to and her concern about the government's treatment of all whistleblowers.
Well, I don't know much more than what's been reported by his lawyer and a couple of news sites, but it seems that since he was charged with these 22 extra charges, including the capital offense, that he could technically face the death penalty, that every night he's been stripped naked, and not only stripped naked to sleep, but then also made to apparently stand the next morning in front of others. It strikes me as very degrading and almost reminiscent of Abu Ghraib. Forced nudity was the very first step on that whole spectrum of steps that progressed. And I'm very worried that this seems like it's migrated now from places like Abu Ghraib, where we attributed that abuse to a few bad apples, the rogue officers, and now there's an entire Marine brig in Quantico that is practicing something very similar.
The military, through their spokespeople, have responded by saying there are some very critical reasons why he's being stripped naked. They intimate that he may be suicidal and could use clothing to hang himself in his cell and such. But we have Representative Dennis Kucinich of Ohio demanding information and explanations. And I know he's pointed out that people in this country are presumed innocent until proven guilty, and that on the face of it, forcing a prisoner to stand naked in their cell for many hours at a time violates the Eighth Amendment of protection from cruel and unusual punishment.
Exactly. And it seems to me that if a congressman request to ascertain for himself these conditions, that seems very reasonable. You know, we're only hearing it from the Pentagon side. I have some background myself. It's just a coincidence that in the FBI we got sued once for a jail suicide, and so I actually had to do a lot of research on jail suicides. And while that is certainly a problem and there's a certain profile, etc., Bradley Manning has not even been judged by mental health professionals to be in that condition. And that's the real nub here, is that the mental health consultants were not the ones who put this suicide watch on. At one point, about 2.5 weeks ago, the Marine Brig officials admitted that the mental health professionals recommended he be off the suicide watch. And the other thing, of course, is in terms of killing yourself with your underwear, if he has a blanket, whatever, there would be other ways. And certainly if he's under supervision, if he's being actually watched, that this wouldn't be possible. So this really does seem like a pretext. I don't understand why Dennis Kucinich or some other independent person is not allowed to even ascertain this for themselves.
Well, let me ask you this, Colleen Rowley. How does the treatment of Bradley Manning, accused of leaking the WikiLeaks documents, how does that fit in with a trend that you yourself are seeing of the treatment or the maltreatment of whistleblowers in various levels of government, from federal to state and local?
Well, I may have been one of the very last whistleblowers who was able to finish and get to retirement eligibility, and, of course, even got my picture on the Time magazine. It was kind of a shining moment there. Unfortunately, what people don't know is that my disclosures about some of the weaknesses and mistakes made about 9/11, none of that was addressed. There was this almost a certain amount of leverage gained by, at the time it was President Bush, over the directors, because everybody was trying to hush up these mistakes. And so the directors, of course, were afraid to speak out when Bush said we were going to attack Iraq. And you really have an entwining of horrendous, terrible mistakes. You get Obama into power, and everybody thinks, oh, he's promised that he will increase transparency in government, that he will protect whistleblowers. And certainly, when he was campaigning, he was on the side of pointing out these illegalities and problems that were going on. Well, he gets into power, and he's almost doubled down on what he said he would do, which is help whistleblowers. He's prosecuting like 3 times the number of whistleblowers that were ever prosecuted in 30 years before him. There's one guy in the National Security Administration, former, who revealed fraud, waste, and abuse, and he's facing 15 years. And so what they're trying to do, I think, is set an example to anyone in government who sees something, you know, bad. Of course, I hate to, you know, you hate to imagine that this could happen, but if you're in a situation where you're certainly in one of these torture situations like General Taguba, who was supposed to be investigating, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to, you know, not follow illegal orders. You are supposed to report these things. And yet, if you do, you are going to be retaliated against. And in some cases, if you try to report and everybody covers it up and you try then to go public, you're going to actually be prosecuted now for leaking. It's really bad. It's very, very disappointing to see this happening in the Obama administration.
That was Colleen Rowley, a former FBI special agent and 9/11 whistleblower. Learn more about the Manning case at bradleymanning.org and couragetoresist.org.
66 years ago, the United States dropped 2 devastating nuclear bombs on Japan. Now 2 more U.S.-designed nuclear devices, the ancient boiling water reactors at Fukushima Daiichi, designed by the General Electric here in the United States, are again spreading poison across Japan. There are 23 sister nuclear plants here in the U.S., 2 of them as close as Pennsylvania. The 8.9 magnitude earthquake and tsunami that followed on the 11th of March were among the worst in recorded history, maybe second only to the 7.0 magnitude earthquake in Haiti for devastation and suffering. Japan's better resource base and construction were largely canceled out by nearly 100 times as much earthquake energy. After walls of water killed thousands of people and left millions of more homeless, now Japan must face their worst nightmare, another episode of nuclear contamination, estimated at 4 on a scale where Chernobyl was the only 7. These reactors were sited, like many reactors here in the United States, in an area that has always had earthquakes. Yet they were so configured that disconnecting the electrical grid would shut down the cooling system at an electrical generating plant. What do you want to bet the same is true of every single reactor here in the U.S. that came from the same designers at General Electric? By what rights should the people of Japan today or the people of America tomorrow have to eat radioactive fish, eat radioactive bread, or drink radioactive milk because General Electric in the United States, utility bosses in Japan, or both want to make money? Perhaps General Electric would be interested in using some of that glowing green cash to help the people of Japan clean up the messes left behind by GE's products at the Fukushima Daiichi power plant? The Japanese government is doing what they can, evacuating the most severely contaminated areas and dispensing iodine tablets to ward off thyroid cancer from radioactive iodine, but the cleanup will take years, and that's if engineers can stop the plants from melting down the rest of the way and creating a second Chernobyl. Now is the time to pull the plug on building any more nuclear power plants.
Head Rock, Jared Ball, DJ Munch, Chocolate City, this is movement music.
Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming, coming.
Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping.
Something.
See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave laborers. Craftsmanship, low price to flip to undercut the market, hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize, soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than the male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart,
it's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holler black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember, DC doesn't work with the right wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, sinister, Strom Thurmond, similar, Confederate, state loving George Bush ministers. Overseer plantation mentality results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs, and now they want to come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmarts in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
On March 3rd, Tim DeChristopher was convicted by a federal jury in Salt Lake City, Utah, on 2 felony counts of interfering with a government auction in December 2008 and making false statements when he placed bids at the auction. DeChristopher had the winning bid on several parcels of land comprising thousands of acres that were being opened for oil and gas drilling during the last days of the outgoing Bush administration. In his bid, he won the rights to 22,500 acres out of 116,000 acres up for auction. DeChristopher said he took the more radical step of becoming a bidder rather than just protesting outside the auction because he wanted to make a stronger statement against the environmental destruction, exacerbating climate change, that would be a byproduct of the extraction of oil and possibly natural gas from the desert near priceless icons like Arches National Park. 29-year-old DeChristopher faces up to 10 years in prison and a fine of $750,000 at his June 23rd sentencing. He hasn't yet decided whether to appeal. Between the lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with DeChristopher about his nonviolent direct action and about the organization he co-founded, Peaceful Uprising, to encourage others to take similar risks to combat the climate crisis and build a just, healthy world.
I was going in there with some kind of intention to wave a red flag about what was going on and try to delay the auction long enough that the new administration could reconsider and hopefully reverse the auction, which is eventually what happened. So I was just going in there with that vague intention, not knowing what that might look like if I was going to make a speech or yell something or something like that. And just when I walked in, they asked me if I wanted to be a bidder.
What happened next?
Well, they stopped the auction after I won about 12 parcels in a row. They stopped it, and an agent came over and asked me to step outside. And I told them exactly what I was doing and why, and they took me into custody. They didn't arrest me at the time, but they took me into custody and questioned me for a few hours before releasing me that afternoon.
When were you charged then?
Well, I wasn't charged until almost 4 months later, I think in part because it took them a long time to figure out if I actually broke any laws. But it was actually after the auction was reversed that I was indicted.
So I want to be sure I understand this. Was the auction reversed because it was tainted by your participation or because the Obama administration had decided they didn't really want to be auctioning off the drilling rights in those parcels?
The latter. I mean, it was once they had taken a second look at the auction, the government admitted that they weren't following their own laws in the first place. And the auction itself was illegitimate to begin with.
So when that happened, did you feel like you were off the hook?
I thought it was possible, but I also realized that in some ways it made it more likely for me to be indicted.
Tim DeChristopher, you had considered using the necessity defense, that is, that you took action to prevent a greater harm, which would have been the despoiling of these lands and the contribution to climate change if they were developed for oil drilling. But you weren't able to do that, right?
In the trial, we weren't allowed to say anything that didn't happen on December 19th. So we weren't allowed to let the jury know that the auction was overturned afterwards because the government admitted it was illegitimate. We weren't allowed to let the jury know that I did, in fact, raise the money in the weeks after the auction to make the initial payment, and we offered that to the BLM, and they refused to take it. The jury never heard any of that information. So the verdict was kind of a foregone conclusion by the time that it actually happened.
Tell me again exactly what were the charges?
It was one count of violating the Federal Onshore Oil and Gas Leasing Reform Act and one count of making false statements.
What were the false statements? You won the bids and you were going to pay for them.
Well, they said that the false statement was the fact that I signed the bidder registration form, which said that I was a bona fide bidder. And they said that at the time that I signed it, I didn't have the intention to actually purchase and develop any of these oil leases. It was interesting in the trial, during cross-examination when I was on the stand, the prosecutors asked if I was bidding in good faith. And I said, could you define in good faith? And he said, well, it means you are a bona fide bidder. And I said, can you define bona fide in this application? And he said, I withdraw the question. And he changed the subject and talked about something else.
You co-founded a group called Peaceful Uprising, which is focused specifically around climate change. Can you explain its goals?
It's something that was set up shortly after the auction with a lot of folks that came together and had heard about what had happened and wanted to encourage similar kind of actions.
Has that happened?
There's certainly been a lot of folks who have expressed their sentiments to me about how they've been affected by this story, and a lot of folks that have come together and built a really strong community of folks who all share that sentiment that we need to be taking stronger action to defend a livable future. And I think the trial and the events surrounding it really galvanized that community a lot. And I think it was an important point for the folks in Peaceful Uprising to make that very public statement outside of the courthouse that whatever happens to me, they're going to respond with joy and resolve, and they're going to keep fighting for a livable future, and they're not going to back down in the face of this attempted intimidation.
That was Tim DeChristopher, an environmental activist who's facing 10 years in prison for placing false bids in a government auction of oil and gas leases. For more information, visit his group's website at peacefuluprising.org.
The 7th to the 9th of March, representatives from Huntington Life Sciences, as well as Covance and James River Laboratories, showed up in D.C. at the Society of Toxicology's 50th Anniversary Convention, the Washington Convention Center. All three are puppy-killing contract animal testing laboratories. On the 8th and 9th of March, animal rights activists showed up three times in barely 24 hours to disrupt this convention with bullhorns. Before protesters could even reach the convention center for the first protest, a convention goer assaulted a protester in the street. I guess vivisectionists, animal torturers, can be a violent bunch, and not just with animals either. Anyway, this isolated outburst of violence did not deter protesters in their mission to confront the Society of Toxicology, Huntington Life Sciences, James River Laboratories, and Covance. That's the sound of animal rights activists calling out vivisectors on their way into the Society of Toxicology's convention at the convention center. The protest didn't stop with this first protest during the day. Barely 5 hours later, protesters were back, disrupting the fancy evening gala sponsored by James River Laboratories. That much noise from three or four bullhorns feeding back can make it awful hard to enjoy that Beatles cover band and cause indigestion. For those who'd had enough, there was a special treat as convention goers left, being confronted in the street by protesters on their way to taxi cabs. This went on for hours as convention goers trickled out. The next day, protesters were back at noon, and you could tell the convention security and the Society of Toxicology were really on edge by the number of security people out near the protesters snapping pictures with expensive cameras. Gerald Wilson, Convention Center or Society of Toxicology Security, identified by your badge. No amount of cameras, no amount of intimidation, no amount even of unlawful police arrest is ever going to stop protesters from opposing the torture of animals. Only closing Huntington Life Sciences, closing down Covance, and closing down James River Laboratories and every other animal torturing vivisection laboratory can ever achieve that. Until then, in D.C. and everywhere, there's no sleep for the wicked.